Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Comedy Arcade, part friendly panel show, part vicious competition, where contestants fight with their best anecdotes on mystery topics generated through a trusty bingo ball. I'm Viv Slayton, host of the show, spirit of the bingo balls, and games master. Points will be awarded for originality, amusement value, and my general caprice and mood on the day. The contestant with the most points at the end of the game wins, but their opponents will be granted a few cheat codes along the way, just to keep it interesting.
Welcome to the Comedy Arcade. We have in a series second, technically, but last time we had a full quota of guests and then Rich Wilson could not connect, so we lost him 2 minutes in. We have only two guests today. Absolutely no pressure on these guests, but I feel like they are going to absolutely deliver, so I am not worried at all. It is a dead head-to-head between our first guest, who is a previous player and has been a beloved fan favourite ever since. Author, comedian, journalist, curator of content, Mark Burrows. How are you?
Hi. You see, you say you're not worried, but there is a glint in your eye that suggests that maybe you might be.
Without further ado, that lovely, beautiful musical giggle you can hear is the delightful podcaster queen, Amy Portman. How are you?
Hi. I'm good, thank you. I'm very excited.
I feel like there are other titles available for you as well, but the only I know you because I've been on your podcast. So
yes.
What else should we know about you at the top?
What else to know about me? I don't really do much else, to be honest. I'm a mother. I now have a dog who's sleeping on the settee.
The listener, that is adorable.
I'm really sorry if she barks. I got her last Sunday and it's all been a bit of a whirlwind.
You've added to your family.
That's I have, yes.
Yeah, awesome.
I was just going to say, I don't really know what else to say about myself. What I'm going to say to you is I think I'm perimenopausal, so my brain isn't working properly. So when you asked me to do this podcast, I was going to say, well,
maybe
good
not.
Good luck if I can remember anything, but I just thought, oh, fuck it. I'm sure I'll remember something.
It's okay.
We'll see.
You're working with two people who are in comedy, so if in doubt, just make something up.
Mm. Perfect.
We absolutely will not call you out on it.
There is no requirement in the industry of entertaining people to tell the truth.
No.
None whatsoever. Give it a spin. Make it funnier. Entertaining is always better than true, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You've shown us a dog, but for the listener, it could be a lion, to be honest. You've already undersold.
Yeah, but I've got a lion.
A lion on the sofa. So if you hear him roaring in the background.
I'll tell you what is true, though, and that is that I feel massively outclassed by Amy's house. Obviously, no one listening can see the videos, but you live in a real grown-up's house. Like, that is a real grown-up's front room. When you did the little twizzle so we could see the dog, that is a lovely, lovely house.
Thank you. It's tiny. I'll show you again. This is it.
It is lovely for the listener.
It is nice.
Properly grown up. I can't.
Whereas, you know, I look like I'm living in some sort of bachelor chow dream. Like, I basically in the room I wanted when I was 14 and still apparently have. Although, actually, because Vix is in the kitchen, I'm in a kind of like study area with bookcases and you're in a living room. We could almost pretend that we're all in the same house.
Yeah.
And your room looks like the most exciting because you've got loads of music.
Yeah, there are at least two guitars there.
There are more. There are three, but there are three bass, three ba- no, two basses, one double bass, a ukulele, and a keyboard in here.
Wow.
We could start a band if we were, in fact, in the same house, but sadly we're not. It went a bit meta earlier because Jordan Gray was in the house when I started recording, and it was very confusing for the people on the Zoom. Are you in her house or is she in your house? I prefer to retain the mystery. So this is how rumours start. But anyway, right. Mark, you know the rules because you played before. Amy, you have a podcast, so I trust you read the materials that are sent to you because that is an expectation of your guests. Brilliant. Yeah, not always true. So this is an exciting and quick off the mark start. Let's get the ball rolling. All right, we have a new category, and it is the most ridiculous thing that you believe to be true.
Attila the Hun was only a meter tall.
What?
Attila the Hun was only a meter tall. Like, years and years and years ago, I got a book of facts, Spike Milligan's book of facts, right, when I was a kid. And it had loads and loads of facts in it with little jokes by Spike Milligan. It was one of my favorite things ever. Things like the human brain is however many percent water, and the little comment that said, does that mean that when your nose runs, your brains are leaking out? When you're eight, that is just a brilliant joke. And one of the facts in it was that Attila the Hun was only a meter tall. Now, I've researched this, and it is completely inconclusive, but it's not out of the question, and I have chosen to believe it's true.
Good for you.
See, so you don't believe that to be ridiculous. People did used to be smaller, though, didn't they? Because when you go to historical villages, we've got one in Cardiff called St. Fagans, and we went there on every shit school trip since records began, and you can't get through the doors. They're too small. So
really?
I think people were smaller. Yeah.
They were, yeah. Not that small, though. I mean, yeah, if you go and look at, like, mummies and stuff in museums, they're tiny. They're very small.
Yeah, Tutankhamun is, like, really...
It's like little, tiny little children. I think I'm just obsessed with the idea of small things. Like, they used to be pygmy elephants. I love they used to be pygmy elephants. They used to be tiny elephants that only existed in certain places. And what I love most about the idea that they used to be tiny elephants is that implies, nay, that guarantees, that at some point there was also tiny baby elephants, which meant you would have got tiny, tiny elephants that were like the size of puppies. And the fact that that was once a thing that was real in the world just like warms me from inside and keeps me going.
Oh, that is a really, that's a beautiful thought. But we would immediately make them pets and ruin it for ourselves. So it's probably for the best that they don't exist.
I'm pretty sure that
in the current world,
I'm pretty sure the reason they
don't, micro pigs all over again, where people accidentally buy massive elephants, like baby elephants. They're like, why is this burst the roof off my house?
I'm fairly sure we hunted them to extinction as well. So that's probably the reason.
So it's on us then. It's on us.
But literally us. I don't mean us as in the human race. Literally, it's on us. Yeah.
Me and you and Amy were out marauding around capturing baby elephants. No, we're not. That is not true. If you believe that, that can be the weird thing that you believed to be true, listeners. My friend was told by a mum that the moon wasn't real. That's what sponsored this category.
Seriously?
And she properly believed it until, like, a much too late an age, frankly.
What did she think it was?
I don't know. Apparently her mum just got sick of taking questions from her one day about the moon, and just to close the conversation down, said, the moon is not real. It's not a real thing.
Oh, my God.
Why would you doubt your parent? You just kind of believe it. I thought my mum knew everything about everything. The older I get, the less true that was.
I quite like the idea that might just start as a conspiracy theory, though, that the moon isn't real. Because, like, you know, flat Earth, that's a thing. People think the Earth is flat. There are people, there is the jury is out about whether this is a hoax or whether it's something that people generally believe, but there was a movement in America that think that birds aren't real.
Birds What do they think they are?
Robot government spies. Search the hashtag birds aren't real.
Fly into the window?
They've malfunctioned, clearly. I mean, I'm not one of these people, by the way. I'm just saying.
Now, I'm fairly sure that the guy who started Birds Aren't Real did it as a kind of an art situationist prank. But and he drives around like giving speeches and holding rallies and stuff. But he attracts people that come along with him, some of which I think are in on the joke that I'm pretty sure is a joke, but I'm not 100% sure is a joke, but some of which genuinely don't think it's a joke. So there are really people who think that birds aren't real. And that's amazing. And also, how do you know they're not true? How do you know? You don't know. You don't know that birds aren't, birds are real. You've only got the birds. You've only got Chris Packham's word for it.
Yeah.
My cat caught a couple of baby birds the other day in the garden, and I knew that he had something. So I went out to see what he had, and there was a little, it was a tiny, tiny baby bird. And to be honest, it did look like a robot. It didn't look real.
Amy! I did. No!
My cat ate it, and I don't think he would have ate it if it had been a robot.
And now your cat is a government spy.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me.
That particular microphone is just very muffled, like you.
It's like the old woman that swallowed a fly rhyme. It's just like, how many layers can we?
I don't know why. Perhaps she was avoiding government surveillance.
Yeah, exactly. She was doing her bit.
Just protecting her constitutional right to privacy.
Did she die at the end? Was that a sad nursery rhyme? Was that one of those sinister ones?
Yeah.
It ends with, she's dead, of course.
Oh, yeah, because she swallowed a horse.
A horse, yeah.
Yeah, no one could possibly do that. She's not an anaconda. Like, that was not going to... But yeah, there's quite a lot of harrowing stuff in childhood, wasn't there? I feel like things are getting a bit more sanitised now? Amy, you're a mum. Is it as dark and harrowing as when the horse disappeared into the quicksand at Neverington Story, for example? Because I'm still not over that.
No, I think children these days are exposed to a lot more stuff. So I think they have to maybe grow up quicker. I don't know. I'm very honest with my children. Like, I will just tell them the truth.
So you're not lying to them about something
I'm not lying
you're
going to
talk about in a podcast in 20 years' time then? No. You've never, never told them the moon isn't real?
The exact reason, so they can't answer this question, basically, when you have them on in 20 years. Because when I saw this question, I was a bit like, what have I thought was true that isn't? And the only thing I could think of that my mum lied to me about was chewing gum. That if you swallowed chewing gum, it'd stick to your insides and you'd die.
Yeah, a classic take a break story that is. Yeah. Like, my daughter chewed her hair, it ended up in her intestine, she died a harrowing death. I used to believe all of those take a break stories. Yeah. Like, I slept with a ghost and now I'm pregnant. Like, they like hook it to my veins. Women's magazines are the best and worst thing in the whole world. It's like the hacks, the little life tips that they put in the end. And it's the same thing, Mark. It's like, are they legitimately doing this or is this trolling where they're like, use a pita bread as a handbag if you're in a jam, or stick sanitary towels to your hips to make your outfits fit better, like rudimentary drag padding.
I mean, you can't fault that, actually. No, sanitary pads do make rudimentary hip pads.
They'd
have to be chunky sanitary pads. Like, yeah,
you'd
have to use old a
lot.
School.
I guess you just use a lot of them.
Or buy something more appropriate, like tights or padding. Foam. I genuinely don't know if it's deadpan or if people actually think these are good ideas. That's the beauty of it.
My absolute favourite one, and this was discovered by a friend of mine who used to be a comic, I'm not sure if she is anymore, Sarah Pierce, who co-runs that comedy club, the Bill Murray. She used to be obsessed with Chat It's Fate magazine, which is the supernatural version of Chat magazine. It's incredible. It has and she used to read about on stage. So I can, and I've seen her do it so much, I can even do it in her tone of voice up, but I won't. But she used to read out.
Do you want the points or not?
But she used to read out the wasn't a problem page, it was a psychic regression page where she'd write into Jenny Smedley, Chat It's Fate's resident deep hypnosis regression person about their problems, and she would tell them what in their past life was affecting their current present life problems.
Brilliant.
It's amazing. It's genuinely amazing.
Definitely a real person, this Smedley woman. Absolutely not made up.
People that do that for a job sleep at night. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously they must find it very entertaining, but they must know that somewhere people really believe that.
Yeah, because it's like tube, like the rush hour crushes in the metro. Apparently, I know someone who used to write those, so some of them aren't real. I was really heartbroken by that, because I used to really buy into all the little stories of all the, like, you in the red scarf, me in the green blazer, Costa, Whitechapel. Like, I was so sad about that. That's the sad thing that I believed for a while, and I wish that the belief wasn't taken from me. It was stolen from me.
They were made up.
A lot of them are made up, apparently, because people bizarrely do not write in.
Loads of stuff like that is made up. Loads of like
horoscopes.
Horoscopes. Well, obviously horoscopes. The cover. I mean, I don't believe in horoscopes, but apparently that is a very Taurus thing to believe. Now, but all of those like women's magazines, they all have that. Like they actually do. Like you could. None of the stories are real. None of the people in the stories are real. Like they go to modeling agencies for people with interesting faces, and then they just will believe anything you come to them with. Like you want 250 quid, then go tell them that your Eastern European boyfriend was eaten by a snake one day because they let it out of its cage and it decided it was going to lay next to him and measure him, and they didn't heed the warning, and the next day the snake had a comedy Eastern European boyfriend sized bulge in the middle, and they'll believe it.
That is, is an urban legend. I've googled that extensively. When it's like, oh, my snake's so sad, but it sleeps in the bed with me. Is it sizing me up? Like, snake truth has come out to bat for the snakes, if you tweet about that. Like the eight men daft section as well. £50 to call out the fact that your partner is a dick, basically. He went for milk. He went for milk. It's been 2 weeks. Ha ha, what's he like? £50. Oh dear.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Horrendous. But yeah, so you've never been mugged off by anything at all, Amy, to your knowledge.
I believe everything everyone tells me, but that's because I like to believe people, but I have got a bit of savvy about me. But my best friend, Nicole, met the father of her children, who told her that he was a chef for the SAS.
Okay.
And she proper believed him. And we were like, are you sure? I mean, she was only like 24. But no, she proper believed him, and he had her on for about a month.
That's quite a weird lie to tell, like quite a specific lie to tell. Like, oh, I'm a chef, but you'll never be able to taste my food because it's classified. Yeah. Like, what?
I was like, is he allowed to tell you he's in the SAS? She's like,
Are the chefs in the SAS in the SAS?
Well, like,
yeah, do you have to be, are they all combat trained?
Because presumably
the joke of it is, he couldn't cook. So it wasn't even, not only is he the worst person in the world, and I know that for a fact, he couldn't even fucking cook.
What was the reason for the lie? Did he not have a job?
No, he's an electrician.
He's the worst person in the world.
For the Marine Corps. He was an electrician for the Marine Corps.
It's a full-time occupation.
I don't know. Why do people lie? I suppose you feel like you need to impress. I don't know. Maybe he just thought it was funny. Maybe he didn't think that she'd believe him. Or he wanted to see how stupid she was to see what his chances were.
Oh, yeah. You meant it as a joke, but the long con has sort of backfired extensively on you.
Oh, yes.
Like when you've told too many people and you just have to maintain it until you can quietly split up with someone. I don't think I've ever got quite that bad a lie. I know a lot of people who pretend to be vegans and vegetarians, though.
Why?
Well, to go out with vegans and vegetarians, I guess.
It makes you look virtuous. God. It makes you look virtuous. It's like Hitler wasn't a vegetarian. There's a long-standing rumor that Hitler was a vegetarian.
Telling us another naive thing that we all believe?
It was Nazi propaganda. Hitler wasn't a vegetarian, but he just wanted to portray himself as a vegetarian in order so that people would think he was virtuous and that he was like better than people. You know, he was a better, more virtuous person. Like, so pretending to be vegan or vegetarian is just you going, I care about the planet, man. Yeah, like, no, I don't know. Like, nothing with a face is consumed in this body. My body is a temple. The earth is a cathedral, and I do not mess with the flesh of the earth. Now, I am a vegan, but that's not the point.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was really on the fence about him until I found out he was vegan. And I was like, oh, yeah, you are better than us. Yeah, up until that point, I was like,
How long are you going to sustain that for? Because if you do actually get into a proper relationship with someone, you're either going to have to carry on with it, aren't you? Or like sneakily have a bit of
steak
or whatever.
Yeah, then you're in the pub and they're like ordering ribs in front of you. Yeah. And you're like, aren't you? Or like sneakily eating a Scotch egg like an apple in an alleyway. Like, what's... It's got to end, surely. And
starting a relationship,
the relationship must end.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Because it's not, I guess it's not an important one unless it's you that's like, I just, it's baffling. Like, genuinely, easily 4 or 5 friends have done this where they've just kind of gone along with it at the start and then ended up, I guess a few of them have accidentally been converted just because it was an easier life. But
wow.
It's the wrong foot to start on, I think.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah, well, what an interesting category that was. We've learned so much. And it's been like 25 minutes. Brilliant. One category, 25 minutes. Will we see two? That's fine. This is my new bingo board. It's bougie. Look,
huh? I love it.
It is bougie.
It's bougie. Rich Wilson bought it for me because he was sick of me complaining about the old one that was losing piece after piece after piece of it. I was sellotaping it closed and it was still bursting balls all over the place. So in the end, he gave in and bought me a new one, which I, do you know what? I didn't plan that, but I sort of subconsciously knew that that would happen.
Manifesting.
I didn't know Rich would do it, but I thought someone is going to solve this problem for me if I leave it long enough.
Manifesting or manipulating, you decide.
Sometimes both things can be true at the same time. Right, next poll. Family rituals. Have you got any weird ones? Or have you got any family rituals that we will find to be weird? Because, for example, Rob Kemp's family have a gravy spoon. They each get dealt a gravy spoon as part of their cutlery for a Sunday dinner, like one each. And he did not understand that that was a really weird thing. That's not normal. Yeah, he was... In his house, your Sunday roast, knife, fork, gravy spoon.
To eat your gravy?
Yeah.
How much gravy are they having?
A lot of gravy. It felt very northern.
I wouldn't go to Sunday dinner around their house. I mean, yeah. I mean, you always want more gravy. Yeah. Always want more gravy. It's all literally gravy. I will happily have loads of gravy. We didn't really have any rituals, but my parents did have their own sort of language a lot. Like every time, like almost every day, when the other one was asking the other one if they wanted coffee, they would go, "You for coffee? You for coffee?" which gradually becomes funnier as you go along. And little phrases that just, at one point somewhere, I think we're in Alton Towers or something, and my dad just came out with a cup of tea, a buttered scone, a sticky bun perchance. And it just became like a catchphrase in our house for the rest of all time. Every time anybody wanted to offer somebody some food, the other one would reply, a cup of tea, a buttered scone, a sticky bun perchance. And I don't know where that came from. I don't know. I can't explain to you why it's funny. It was always funny, but I cannot tell you why.
This is the kind of stuff that I love to hear about, though, because it's just really it becomes sweet. Part of the sort of fabric of your existence, but you don't necessarily know that outside your house everyone could have this going on or nobody at all.
Yeah.
My dad's always been one for party games as well. One of his favorite ones, which he was really good, yards of ale. He's amazing at a yard of ale, but one of his best ones that he used to do is that I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but you get a roll of toilet paper and a pint of lager. You tuck one end of the toilet paper in your bum crack. And then you unroll it to the end of the garden and then you set fire to the other end.
Oh my God.
And you are not allowed to whip out the bit of paper until you've downed the pint. That was one of my dad's party tricks.
How quickly did it burn? Like, did the ply matter? I've got questions.
A whole roll.
Well,
like
this roll. This no, you just
because I could do it in a full roll.
No,
yeah,
not a full
like,
roll.
That's
you just
ages.
Unroll it. You just unroll it to the end of the garden.
Oh, okay.
Okay. A weird snake situation.
More, it's usually like a barbecue trick, this one. But yeah, and actually, though, it works out relatively well. The fire traveled up at just the point where it was close, but not impossible. Apart from one time where his mate Gary decided to put lighter fluid on it just to spice things up a little bit. And the smell of burnt bumhole hair pervaded the garden.
See, no one's. I haven't got any family rituals, says Mark. Has anyone heard of this completely ludicrous game that has never been done before and should never be done? This is not like, ow.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a ritual or just a pastime or a hobby.
Well, that's the beauty of these categories. They're deliberately vague. They can be whatever you need them to be. They're like horoscopes, basically. You can go complete, go full politician, A, B, it. That's a great question, Vix. What we should really be talking about is something completely different. Like.
And then just repeat your answer five times using exactly the same words. Exactly. I mean, I've got one that isn't funny that I tweeted about earlier on, but was just really sweet, where my mum used to do it. We used to do the big shop in Asda every Saturday. And the two things always happen in the big shop is one, mum would always buy the cheap ham ends. You know, the chunky ones. Yeah. And then we'd have and some crusty bread, and we'd have a sandwich for lunch that was like ham ends, cream cheese, and chopped up cherry tomatoes. And it was always like the best. Like, I've been chasing that high for 30 years now.
Right.
But the weird one is, and I really want to know if anyone else's family does this, is we were allowed when shopping to have a packet of crisps each as we walked around
with
we'd pick up and we'd open and eat the crisps, and then we'd pay at the checkout for the empty packet. Right, was that just our family, or is that a thing?
No, I don't think it's technically allowed, but it was back when parents just thought they could do whatever the fuck they wanted, to be fair. My nana, not my real nana, like an older woman my mum knew who sort of took her under her wing, so Nana Elsie over the road, didn't think crisps were good for me. So when I was about 3 or 4, would get me a polony slicing sausage instead to eat going round. And I don't think that was much better nutritionally. Looking back now, they're eating it like a bar of chocolate, a full polony sausage.
Well,
I
guess it's more keto.
Do they still exist? Yes.
I'm not sure what a polony sausage is.
I don't know what it's made of. Nothing good.
Is it like a salami, like a pepperami, that kind
of thing? No, it's not. It's not so exotic. Just like a proper, it wasn't quite pate, but it wasn't ham. And it comes in those little sausages, like you get the fancy cheese in. You know, you get the little cheese sausages at Christmas. But yeah, no relation, not from the same family. More of the Billy Beer family than the...
Right.
Family.
Not quite pate and not quite ham is also how I've been describing myself on my Tinder profile.
And I bet you're getting shed loads of swipes for that, but do not unwrap you for a child. That is good advice.
It's exceptionally good advice, and I'm surprised it needs to be said. I also put that in my Tinder profile, but it wasn't until I removed it that I started getting any response.
A barman started listening in on a conversation I was having last night, and it was ended with like, consent is really important, it doesn't matter. And he was like, oh, I love these weird conversations where you just get to the end and you don't know the context. I was like, no, there's no context. Consent is very important. I was like,
why do you need if you context? Were,
if you already know that, do me a favor, please tell all of your friends.
He's a barman.
He really wished he didn't pull that thread for me.
Yeah. He's a useful person to spread that message.
Please tell everyone you know.
If he put that on a fortune cookie and gave it out to every single person he served a pint to, and just every single person in a pub, like, oh, fortune cookie. Oh, it says consent is really important. I'll take that on board. Like, it could change the world.
Because that's how it works. Yeah. One day.
If we could just get that message out.
I don't trust things when they're told to be by the mainstream media, but if they're in a fortune cookie, I will take it on board.
I've kind of forgotten what the category was, to be honest.
Family rituals. Have you really thought about this? And that doesn't take very long, but all my family do is drink.
Amazing.
We've never had any rituals other than the fact that my family really drink a lot. And I actually stopped drinking. It would be nearly 3 years ago.
It's
been so hard for them to get their head around it, because I didn't have to stop drinking. It was a choice that I made for many reasons. But they're just really big on the alcohol.
because you do have that thing when you stop drinking tonight. I drink, but there have been times where I've not drank. The guitarist in my band, Andrew, once decided to not drink for a whole tour, just as a like personal discipline thing. And there is a weird thing when people do drink and you tell them you're not drinking for whatever reason, where they look at you and you can just see the only thing they've got going on in their head, the only message coming out from behind their eyes is, why?
Yeah. Well, it's because it casts a light on you then. You're like, oh, no, I don't want to be vulnerable with drunkenly vulnerable with a sober person. Like, we've got to approach this on an even keel. That's the thing when, like, my friends will come out and we'll go to the pub and like, I'm not really drinking tonight. And I'm like, oh, well, then I can't, because I will become wildly indiscreet and you will remember it all. And that is unacceptable to me, I'm afraid. That is,
and you're relatively indiscreet when sober.
Exactly. Imagine how much worse it would be if I was just like, bleh.
I don't remember anything at all, so you'll be fine going out with me. I never remember anyway.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, you're poor exempt Andrew. From this.
Yeah, poor Andrew. When we were touring,
what a tour!
We played New York City, right? We played actual New York City. It was really good. We played the Bowery Electric. It was a really cool gig, and we were like, "Ah, we played New York City. It's so exciting!" And we went for cocktails afterwards, and we were drinking. And Andrew snuck off to the toilet to read his book.
Wow,
That's how gripping that's how gripping the company was.
Well, when you're we'd been going for quite some time. Like, we'd started drinking before we went on stage. Then you've got the adrenaline high, and we just continue to drink. Now it's 2 o'clock in the morning.
You're in a toilet cubicle in New York, wondering how your life choices has led you to where you
are. Why didn't he just go home?
Well, we're all staying in the same place, so and the person we're staying
with is New York. I would be so grumpy if I was like sat in my hotel while everybody was having a good time. I would rather be the spectre at the feast, I think, in that scenario.
I'd rather be at home than sat in a toilet reading a book.
Depends on the book.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
A couple of days earlier, we played Pittsburgh and we'd gone back to a friend's house. Our friends own this incredible like roadside attraction called Trundle Manor in Pittsburgh, where they basically turned their house into a kind of rockabilly Adams Family house. It's full of taxidermy, like taxidermy and gross stuff and things in jars. And there's walls swing apart and like it's revolting and awesome. And we went back there and got and just like proceeded to get completely trashed. It was the most drunk we got on the tour. Our singer Andy was wearing a silver helmet, going around wearing a pointy bra, going, "I'm Madonna, watch me Vogue." I don't know why, but it was very funny at the time. And again, poor Andrew, stone cold sober, went to bed. Woken up continually. Bless them. And then the next morning had to deal with everyone's hangovers while going, "Morning, hello." Yeah.
Let's do fun stuff together sober now.
We're getting on the road. Okay, New Jersey, let's go. And we're just coffee.
I stopped drinking in a time of my life where I can get away with it, because I don't really go out that much anymore. But had it have been 20 years earlier, it would have been a completely different.
Well, then you would have been too young to drink, Amy, because you look about 25. So I'm not having that.
That is so true.
Oh, yeah. I tried to stop drinking, and I'm so prolifically known for drinking, a few years ago that my efforts ended on a really well-intentioned night where I was having a really good time. Everybody else was drunk, but I was living, I was living my best life. I was enjoying the chats, enjoying everybody else unraveling around me in good spirits. And the only explanation that they could have for me not drinking was I must be pregnant. So to prove them wrong, I initially tried to lead with, no, my doctor basically told me if I continue at this rate, I will die. But they were still sort of whispering at me and like moving soft cheese away. So I just had to go really hard on spirits. I was like, fine then, I want to kill this dead. Not having this.
I mean, the cheese was the last straw as well.
Yeah.
Last cheese straw.
It was. It was not acceptable to me. Right. Okay. Onwards. I do quite enjoy doing the ball. It's
quite jealous.
Mainly for me. It's not for else. Right. Let's have a look. A time in your life when you fumbled the ball, like a moment in your life where you did not make the right decision. Keep it light.
Okay, I'm gonna have to revise my answer.
I say that because Mark is going through a divorce at the moment, and I will say that your story so far of this breakup have been darkly hilarious. But
I mean, speaking of fumbling the ball, I've made some pretty poor decisions since that's happened.
Well, this is what I'm hoping for. I want your life moments where you know, things could have been different.
I'm going to give this one some thought.
Okay.
I'm going to punt this one over to Amy while I think of a good example that is less incriminating.
Yeah.
I was at the final stage for an internship at BMG, the record label, when I was 19. Yeah. And the thing they gave me to do, it was a task that was all about writing about Avril Lavigne and how she was bringing female-fronted rock to the foreground. And I love Avril Lavigne, but she is almost pure pop. And I was so stressed and so nervous about this interview that I shouted at the interviewer about it and argued that it was a silly task because... As someone who spent time in rock clubs and spent time in pop clubs, these two things do not mesh together. I told her in a tone of voice I don't often use. And so I kind of conscientiously objected to the task. And I was like, well, I'm prepared to do it, but I fundamentally oppose this. And
you got the job, yeah?
No, my dad drove like 4 hours to London from Cardiff, and I think I was in there for 20 minutes. And I got in the car. He's like, "How do you think that went?" I was like, "I think well." Basically, I was like, "Yeah, I'm prepared to do the task, but basically, it's bollocks." And she was like, "Okay, then. Well, that's fine. This has been great. Safe journey home." I was like, "No. I will." So that was
big swing, yeah, and it could have worked.
I know. Imagine the life I could have led if I'd ended up. Well, to be honest, I know the life I could have led because somebody I ended up working for in the civil service at the Centre of Information, where my job was to work for the Health and Safety Executive and write press releases when fairground rides fell over or people's hands got caught in machinery.
Oh my God.
She had done the BMG internship and she was working alongside me, which was very comforting. I will say it was quite a comforting moment. I was like, in my mind, I'd imagined this glittering music career, but then Lynette had got the job and we were together in Cardiff writing about unfortunate accidents in factories. So it was
This has made me remember one. So I used to work for some DJs and I got made redundant and my friend set me up with a job interview and it was to be a PA for a celebrity, but they couldn't tell you which celebrity it was. So I went and had this interview and I think it was, if I remember rightly, it was more to be like a personal PA rather than like a business PA. And everything was going really well. And then she said, "Is there anyone, any like celebrities that you wouldn't like to work for?" And I was like, "I really don't like Noel Gallagher." And then went on this, because I was a massive Blur fan. And not that I couldn't like Blur and Oasis, but Oasis are the most overrated. I've got one of their albums. Sorry if I'm offending either of you.
No, I'm
but
totally.
I was just like,
I've literally got a Blur tattoo. It's fine.
I took my mum to see, my mum loves Blur. That's one of our family rituals, actually, is playing Park Life at Christmas because my mum fucking loves it.
Is there a particular point at Christmas, like before the, like
after
before
she's
dinner,
had enough?
Like, oh, I see.
Usually. But yeah, so we have, and I can't remember if she asked me why, but I think I went into a bit of a, I just thought he was quite rude and I don't know. Anyway, the job was for Noel Gallagher. I didn't get the job and I found out because my friend had got me the interview and she's like, "You're never going to believe who the job was for." So I was like, "What are your fucking chances?" But then
I think it could have gone either way, to be honest. So I don't think you need to be a fan of his music to be a PA. And I think if anything, if you're a fan, that might be quite annoying to somebody if you need them to be.
Yeah.
Like if they're
but
always
then to say that you particularly didn't like them probably wasn't. But then I thought if I hadn't have said that and I had got the job, would that have ended well? Because obviously I would have taken it because even though I didn't like him, it was, you know. But yeah.
You get some stories out of that.
A road less.
I did. I got a story.
A road less traveled.
So I had, I don't know if you know this about me, but I used to work in the music industry as well. So I worked for social media music PR for years. I used to run Shakira's Bebo account. I was officially Shakira on Bebo.
Were Shakira. How'd you get in the mood for that? How'd you get in the zone before work?
I concentrated on my hips telling the truth. I strapped down my old man boobs so that they weren't so that they'd be small and humble and not mistaken for mountains.
Put some sanitary towels on your hips.
So. Yeah, absolutely. And I worked on my awoo. But there were loads of weird things. But I remember once I was working on Lee from Blue. Lee from Blue was relaunching his solo career. Now Lee from Blue is an idiot.
You cannot put really? Foot wrong there because you are like because everyone believe it was him. Like he was.
Oh, well,
like... I'm scared to know.
Well, there was the point where we had to where I got a phone call from his manager at 10 o'clock at night saying, "Mark, I need you to change Lee's Twitter password. I need you to do it now, and you are under no circumstances allowed to give Lee a new password." That was because of what Holy Moly called the next day Lee from Blue's Twitter meltdown, which was genuinely funny.
What was he melting down over?
Oh, he was calling people pigs. He was because people were just somebody would insult him on Twitter, and he's not bright enough to just go. That's all right. He always took the bait. He always took the bait. It was ridiculous.
Because it was him, wasn't it, that decided that to use the opportunity to comment on the atrocities of 9/11 to highlight the plight of the elephant.
Yes. I remember that.
It's like, yeah, this is terrible, but what we're not talking about, elephants.
If you the clip for that is amazing. Just keep an eye on Duncan James's face. And that happens. And you hear him going, you can just see him going, "Okay, Lee. All right, Lee. All right, Shubley." It was genuine. I felt sorry for him. He was like, he'd been famous since he was 16 years old. No one had ever taught him how to be a grown up. Like, he'd spent the bits where we learned how to be vaguely grown ups, he was standing up off a stool on cue. Like, he used to come into the office and not have enough money to get the train home and have to borrow money because it never occurred to him to book his train ticket in advance. But the one that was the time I dropped the ball and actually nearly got me fired was I was sat in a meeting with it's like, because in the music industry you have all these meetings. I have a meeting where you're working on an artist, and like, so around the table once a month or something, you'll have like the manager, the tour manager, the tour booker, the PR, the label person, the person who's doing the social media, and they'd all be together discussing how it's going. And Lee had just released this single called Secret Love, except it never got released. They put it out as a teaser, kind of did some radio. And it was appalling. It was terrible. Absolutely awful. It was like this light dance kind of. No one wanted that from Lee Ryan. And it was dreadful.
There is a Brian McFadden song that he had to withdraw of a similar caliber. But it is incredible because it's full of like Euro pop horns. But ultimately, the lyric is really, really sex pesty. And his PR for it was like, I've written it about his partner at the time, Delta Goodrum. And it was all about how he prefers her drunk and like messy and fucked up. And it just... it's the creepiest song in the world, and it's, you can't find it anywhere, but it existed for a while, and it was a proper guilty pleasure of mine because it was so much fun and so awful. And yeah, you must find it. So it's there with Secret Love. It's out there somewhere.
What I learned, right, is when you ask people, when they come around the table and they're asking you, I was on a bit of a high because we were working on The Wanted, the boy band.
Ooh,
and we
nice.
It was basically the same group of people. We just had the meeting about them, and that was going very well. Right. So we got to Lee, and they'd been very complimentary about how I'd been in the meeting. They told me I'd been doing really good work, so I was on a high. And then they asked me what fans were thinking about Secret Love, and I said, well, basically the fans think it's shit. And it turns out that is not the language it's appropriate to use at a major record label meeting.
If it's true, it's true.
The thing is, they did. The fans thought it was shit. No one liked it. It was getting dreadful responses. But oh god, the pin that you could hear drop, the intake of breath.
That's like a moment where you realise that Lee was just in the cupboard all the time wanting to tell you.
Crying. Just crying.
What did you say about me?
It was, oh God, it was like, yeah.
But what did they want you to say?
Well, I think I could have termed it as, fans are not responding very well. It's you know, just a little bit more, a teeny tiny bit more like democracy, not democracy, what's the word, diplomacy.
The response is being mixed.
The response has been mixed, exactly.
Some people haven't heard it, some people hate it.
The other time I professionally dropped the ball was I was the editor of my student magazine at university, Loughborough Student Union magazine, label magazine. You had to be elected to do it. It was a full-time job for a year. You did it either as a year out or after university. Like, it was an amazing, like, first time full-time job, and I was really, really proud of my first issue of the year. Like, my and I had like all this cool stuff in about stuff you could do in town, and all this great stuff that if you were a student coming for the first time to Loughborough, you'd know exactly what to do and who to see. And to cap it off and to fill a quarter of a page because an advert had dropped out, I put in this tick list of things you should do whilst being a student, important things to do, and they included things like being sick in a bush, collecting lots of different bottles, stealing garden gnomes or traffic cones, and there was loads of stuff. Now, what I learned later and what was explained to me at length by the local police sergeant is that it is extremely against the law to tell people to steal things in the press. Like, extremely against the law.
It's not a real suggestion, though.
Yeah, surely. But I did tell them to fill out the tick form, send it into the magazine office, and offered a prize for the person who did it first.
Oh, they had to be banged to rights.
Yeah, and there were several pieces in the local paper about it. Like, there is a picture in the Leicester. It made it to the Leicester Mercury. It wasn't just on a local level; it made it to a county level. There was a picture of the Loughborough Echo that I framed and put up in the office of the student magazine of a very, very serious looking local resident with a copy of my magazine. Just looking very like
face.
So what it turns out, what was explained to me by the police sergeant when she came to find out what I was doing is
why have you recommended this crime spree?
Committing of theft and other crimes in the press carries a prison sentence.
Fuck, actually.
So and I was let off for the warning.
How are you supposed to know that, though?
Well, exactly. How are you supposed to know that? Although, now thinking about it, it is a stupid thing to do. I told them that it was a knowing nod to the student stereotype, that it was not intended to be taken seriously, that no harm was intended, and I was very sorry. I printed a full retraction, and it was okay in the end, but...
That's a good story, though.
That is how I started the first issue of my journalism career.
And it's a good story of a story. I'm very, very, very happy with this new category. This has been an absolute delight. And that is the end of the game. Oh, I know. I'm really sad about
it. It goes by so quickly.
I know. Not always. Said with all the love of someone who's on their fourth run of the day. it's speed dating time.
That's really good going.
It's speed dating time zone. Sometimes 5 minutes can feel like an hour. No shade on the other episode. You can guess which one it was about. But yeah. Listen to them all. Give me a guess. I tick them off on a list. Send them to me. So while I am totting up the scores, let's find out where we can find you and what you're up to. We'll start with Mark Burrows. What are you doing?
So you can find me on Twitter at 20th Century Mark, 20th Century MARC. That's basically where I spend all of my time. That's like, I literally just live on Twitter. What am I doing? I have got some comedy gigs coming up, which is exciting. Ooh. I'm playing and doing a show in Cottesbatch in Leicestershire, which is which I'm really looking forward to later on this month. And I'm working on a book which is coming out in September or October called The London Boys, Bowie Bolan and the 60s Teenage Dream, about the teenage life of David Bowie and Mark Bolan. And that is super exciting.
But you also already have books out.
And I have two books out as well. My award-winning biography of Terry Pratchett, The Magic of Terry Pratchett, which is... I'm going to my first Discworld convention this year to sell books, and I'm very excited about that. It's rare I'll get to know fundamentally that I'm the coolest person in a room, but this will be one of those occasions. And this is getting me cancelled, isn't it? And also,
won't tell them. I don't think we've got a lot of crossover on those fans and my podcasts.
I'm also playing the Lincoln Steampunk Festival this year with a band I'm going to put together at the last minute called Mark Burrows and the Mudlarks. And it's just going to be like a collection of my quote-unquote greatest hits. And that's going to be fun. So, yeah. And also, I've got a book out about the Manic Street Preachers, which I really, really like.
It's very good. Having read it, I can tell you. Cool. And Amy, what about you? What are you doing with yourself?
My most exciting thing is I'm going to Camp Bestival, and I'm going to be interviewing people at Camp Bestival for my podcast.
That's really cool.
I love Camp Bestival.
I love Camp Bestival. I don't know who I'm going to be interviewing, but I'm going to be interviewing someone.
TBC.
But, you can... Yeah, TBC. I'll be there regardless.
And if in an official capacity or just guerrilla style? Because interview people at Camp Bestival. They can't stop me. I'll buy a ticket. Yeah. Comedy Arcade's a festival, guys. It's in a field. Behind this tent.
We played Camp Bestival last year. It was the first first festival that we played after lockdown, and it was glorious just to be back in a festival. It was so nice and so sunny, and there were so many people dressed up like they're in Cobra Kai.
Yeah. It is the best festival, I think.
That's exciting. And the name of your podcast?
It's Mum and Mama Pod. So Dumb and Dumber, but Mum and Mama Pod. And I'm on all the socials. And I've got loads of episodes. I've got 2 years worth of episodes for you to catch up on.
Yeah. So if you're not
And you're on
listening,
one soon.
I am. I'm really excited about it.
I'm very excited about it too. Mark, would you like to come on my podcast?
About mums or mummers.
It's not about mums. I talk to everyone about everything.
Okay, cool.
I know I've been busy since we last saw each other, Mark, but...
I was going to say, that would have been that's quite the turnaround.
Yeah. No, it's changed. It started off as like a single parenting podcast, but now it's just turned into me talking to lovely people, really, because I'd like talking. And there's only so much you can talk about with kids. It gets a bit boring after a while. Maybe I'll start one about dogs.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to think of a pun. Yeah, that's where I went, and I thought that's not right.
Of course,
you
that's
thought, Mark.
We've already had that discussion.
Of course, that's where you went. And the what that says is that our minds work quite similarly, which we already knew. But I'm more shameless than you.
Yeah. I'm a PR person. There's a filter in there. It doesn't. It's faulty, but it's there. Mark, you are the winner of this.
Yes.
Absolute champion head-to-head, though. Like, we did not need the third guest. No disrespect to the third guest. I will have them on again, but we didn't need them. We carried this on our own. So thank you for sharing all of these stories.
Fuck them, Vex. The real
winners are the friends we made along the way. And the listeners. So thank you so much for being part of Comedy Arcade. You are now free to go.
Thanks for listening to The Comedy Arcade. There'll be a new episode next Thursday with new balls and new guests. If you liked it, like us any way you can, and subscribe, and tell all your friends. Also, tell us. We're in all the usual places on all the social media. And if you didn't like it, I've been Sean Walsh, and this is What's Upset You Now. The USP is, it's only 15 minutes.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.